walk across the courtyard towards the library. I can hear the insects buzzing the leaves beneath my feet.
Good evening, Kodiak, and welcome to another episode of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA. My name is Athenia. I'm host of this show, and on behalf of myself as well as the Kodiak Public Library Association, I'd like to thank you for listening. I've got a fun show lined up today. First off, I'm interviewing Danny Petrie, who is the author of the Alaskan Courage book series, which is based in a fictional town called Yancey that is in the Kodiak Archipelago. So I interviewed her about her books and what it was like to write about a fictional town in our neighborhood. Later on the show, Katie Baxter, the library director at the Kodiak Public Library, joins me in the show for lively live chats. She's got a lot of fun things to share with us about what's coming up for the summer reading program that the Kodiak Public Library is participating in, some of the fantastic events for children, teens, and adults that she has coming up this summer, as well as a legislative update on what's been happening with the budget and how that affects the Kodiak Public Library. We're very glad to have her on the show today. And after that, Jordana Long will be on the show with her husband Chris, and they're giving us a little summary and discussion about A Midsummer Night's Dream. Jordana is doing the Shakespeare Reading Circle that's happening on June 26th from 2 to 4:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. So this is a great opportunity to familiarize yourself a little bit more with the story and get excited for that event. And that will fill the full hour we have here for Dog-Eared Reads. So before I get going, I want to take a minute to thank everybody that came out to the KPLA's Crabfest book sale. It was a resounding success. We saw a lot of great books leaving our shelves and heading out in bags and boxes to the Kodiak community. And we're grateful that you came out and purchased books from us and showed your support by maybe becoming a member of the KPLA. Thank you again. Please remember, you can always stay updated on what the Kodiak Public Library Association is up to by visiting our website at www.kodiakpubliclibraryassociation.org. And if you're ever wanting to volunteer with us or help out at our events, including our Crabfest book sales, you can email us at kpla.alaska@gmail.com and let us know about your interest. We would love to have your support. So, with that said, let me begin the show with Beyond the Cover and our interview with Danny Petrie. Makes us do the opposite of what's right. Welcome to Beyond the Cover, our segment in Dog-Eared Reads, where we talk with authors, musicians, and other performers coming to or writing about Kodiak. On today's segment of Beyond the Cover, we're chatting with author Danny Petrie. Danny Petrie writes inspirational romantic suspense. She is the author of the Alaskan Courage series, including the best-selling novels Submerged, Shattered, Stranded, Silenced, and Sabotaged, published from 2012 to 2015, as well as the short story Shadowed, which is featured in the novella collection entitled Sins of the Past, and just released on May 3rd of this year. She is also the author of Cold Shot, the first book of the Chesapeake Valor series, which came out in January of 2016. Her Alaskan Courage series has been honored with the Daphne du Maurier Award, 2 Holt Medallions, a Christie Award nomination, 2 National Reader's Choice Awards, and the Gail Wilson Award of Excellence, as well as the Christian Retailing Best Award, among many others. She is joining us today from Maryland, where she lives with her husband and visits with her 2 daughters, son-in-law, and grandson. Danny Petrie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So to start off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what inspired you to write, and specifically what inspired you to write inspirational romantic suspense?
Sure. So I've always loved writing. I've always loved the power of stories. I love mysteries in particular. I kind of grew up reading Nancy Drew, and every day after school I'd have to come home and watch Scooby-Doo episode before I would go out and play with my friends. So I've always been a mystery girl, and I dabbled with some creative writing through high school and a little bit in college, but my husband and I met and we got married and we started a family, and I really put that love of writing kind of on the back burner. Fast forward about a decade through our marriage, and I had a really serious illness. And while I was recuperating from it, I started reading again a lot because my girls were older and they weren't little toddlers running around, which is sometimes hard to get that reading time in. But I started reading again, and it really brought back the love of story. And a friend gave me a copy of Dee Henderson's The Negotiator, which is an inspirational romantic suspense, and I read it, and I thought, this is what I want to write. I love the combination of romance and suspense, and I love a faith element because I'm a Christian, and it's just part of my daily life. It seemed only natural that it'd be part of my characters' lives. So I started writing, spent several years studying the craft, attending workshops and conferences, before I sold, and Submerged was my debut novel.
And so was it a fairly quick process between when you wrote the novel and when you actually got it published, or was there a journey there as well?
Well, I wrote two manuscripts that have not been published, and they might be at some point down the road. So Submerged was the third manuscript I wrote, but once I finished it, it actually shockingly went really quick. As I mentioned, I kind of had been studying for years, and so it wasn't overnight. From the time I had the idea I'd love to write a book to when I actually got published was 7 years. But from Submerged being finished, I finished it in August of 2010, and I sold it, got my contract for it in November of 2010. So that process from submitting it to an editor and getting the contract was fairly quick after waiting a good number of years.
And so do you think that there was a particular reason for the ease which you found the manuscript got picked up? Is it a welcoming field? I would imagine that inspirational romantic suspense is a fairly narrow genre. So is it really competitive still?
Yes, I would say it's definitely very competitive. It was a little bit interesting how it happened. I finished the book in August, and there's a conference, American Christian Fiction Writers Conference in September. And I finished the book, and I said to my husband, I really feel like I need to go to this conference. I feel like I need to go, and I need to pitch at this conference. And he said, okay, you know, go ahead and go. So I signed up. I was too late to get any appointments with editors or agents, and I thought, well, maybe this wasn't the best idea, but I'm just going to go ahead and go. And God is so good. The first night I was there, my publisher had a spotlight session where they sat and were talking about books that they were looking for and genres they were looking for. And who is now my editor, said, we're looking for inspirational romantic suspense that's a little bit out of the box. And I thought, well, mine really is a high level of adventure that might count as out of the box. And so I approached him after his talk, and he was gracious enough to ask for the first 3 chapters, and then several weeks later for the whole manuscript, and then several weeks later said he was taking it to committee for a contract. So I think it just honestly, I was in the right place at the right time, and it was the editor I was interested in because I had seen other books he had edited and I followed his blog, and so I kind of knew who I wanted to work with. Why he chose it, I'm just really thankful. I think he did, and he has said he really liked the added element of adventure. He loved the location, so I think he was just excited to find something that was a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Right. So your Alaskan Courage series is based in Yancey, which is the lone town on Terriak Island, and it's a fictional island you placed on the southern tip of the Kodiak Archipelago. So you're writing about our town. What made you decide to write about the Kodiak area, and why did you decide to create a fictional town for your characters to live in versus basing it on real towns around the Kodiak Archipelago?
Sure. Well, the reason I decided to do a fictional town is I have not had the pleasure of being able to visit Alaska yet, and I felt kind of uncomfortable writing about an actual place when I've never had the opportunity to visit there. So I thought if I wrote a fictional island, I thought, one, it would just be fun to kind of create a little world and create the town and really kind of fashion it around the characters, and it would give me a little bit of fictional liberties. But I chose that area because as I was researching, I started with researching Alaska, and then I started researching sections of Alaska, and then I, you know, and I was just, I just found Kodiak to be beautiful and such an interesting place, and I've been fortunate enough to connect with several readers that live in Kodiak, and they, you know, have emailed me, they've allowed me to email them some questions, and it's just really made a great connection to that part of the story.
Yeah, you'll definitely have to come visit it. It is a beautiful place here. You do a good job of conveying the wonder that we have here, the natural beauty around us. And in fact, when I first started reading your book, I didn't know that Yancey was fictional. I went to look it up on a map. And
I've heard that before. People have said that. I want to go vacation there. Where is it? And so I love that. And I absolutely would love to visit. My husband and I have talked about it. You know, maybe it's an anniversary trip, but I've got a whole list of stuff I'd love to do and places I'd love to see. And I said, but Kodiak's number one when I get out there. So I would love to make it there one day.
Well, I hope you do. So you mentioned that you haven't visited Alaska, and I know that in your book, it's based in Yancey, but your characters are, you're right, high adventure. They're traveling all over. In particular, I think it's your second book where your character's a skier. And then, well, actually, it would be the brother of the skier. And so she's looking for her brother, and she travels to British Columbia. She goes to Colorado. She's traveling throughout Alaska as well. Have you been to a lot of those other places you write about, or what is your process for researching the places that you write?
Sure. I have not been to the other places that were in that book. So what I do when I research a location that I'm not able to go to, I do a number of things, but I usually start by reading about the location as a whole. I read about its history. I read travel guides. I read, you know, if there's a regional cookbook to the area, anything I can get my hands on that really gives me a full picture of the area. And then what I found extremely helpful is I watch documentaries that are set in those areas. It really gives you a feel, even if the documentary is on, let's say, a particular animal like Kodiak bears. Just seeing the landscape and seeing people within the video and the footage within it is really helpful. If there's been a movie filmed in the area, I watch that just to kind of see the location. And I spend a lot of time researching. I also belong to several writing groups, and I always put out there, has anybody been to or lived in? And I usually get a handful of people who have either lived there or have visited the different places, and so they're really able to give me some great personal feedback.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question. All of the books in your Alaskan Courage series start with the letter S. It's just submerged, shattered, stranded, silenced, sabotaged, and now the short story, Shadowed.
Which is Shadowed, yep. Mm-hmm.
So is there a meaning behind that?
Okay, well, it's a good question. What happened was, is the first book, I picked the title. I loved the word submerged. I felt it really conveyed different parts of the story, not just the diving, but about things kind of that have been submerged coming back up. And so we went with it. And then when the second book came out, my editor said, what kind of titles do you like? And I said, I think really in this relationship, there's some parts where things get kind of shattered, and I like shattered. And he's like, okay. And then when we did that, we realized we were kind of setting a pattern. And by then he was like, you got to keep all your titles as titles. So I was like, okay. So each one was a little trick of finding one that started with S, ended with ED, but that was true to the story. And that was really fun. And at one point for the last book, I believe it was, we did a little bio, and we did a contest for readers to suggest S titles or to guess what the title might be, and readers were super helpful, and we ended up going with one of the titles. So yeah, we now that we have my second series, my editor has told me to never do that again. It's like, it's kind of hard always coming up with one that fits right, so I recommend you don't do something similar in the series. I've stayed away from that.
That's great advice. I noticed when I looked on your website that you have a really amazing supplemental coverage of all of your books. You've got bios, you've got pictures of your characters, you've got videos. You know, one of your books features the Iditarod, and you have Iditarod footage on your website. You've got ski footage of Alaska heli skiing on your website. And it really is amazing that you can go onto that website and kind of feel like you're immersed in the world of those characters. And so it shows that love of the places that you write about. And I think your website is fantastic too.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I'm so glad you get the feel. That's really the purpose of it, is I want when readers come to the website, not just to get the information about the books, but to really be able to experience a little bit of the world where the stories take place. And so I love hearing that you felt that way. That's wonderful to hear. And I love providing extras for my readers, for them to be able to see, you know, pictures or video footage or whatever it might be. I think it just really adds to the story world.
Yeah, it definitely does. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Beyond the Cover and Dog-Eared Reads on KODK 90.7. We're talking today with author Danny Petrie, writer of the best-selling Alaskan Courage book series. Now, this book series is detailing the lives of the McKenna siblings, which are five siblings that live in this fictional town, Yancey, Alaska. There are three boys, Gage, Cole, and Reef, and the two girls, Caden and Piper. It's a large and faithful family. Is that the kind of family you grew up in, Danny? Is that what made you inspired to write about a family, or is that just a writing device you wanted for the series?
That's a great question. No, it's not how I grew up. I grew up with one older sibling, but we're far apart in age. So I think, honestly, it was kind of the family dynamic that I would have hoped to have. I just thought, really, the initial idea was I thought it'd be really fun to write about a family that runs an adventure outfitting company. And so I knew I needed multiple siblings. I wanted a bunch of different adventures. And, you know, as I started to kind of sketch it out, you know, these characters, as I wrote my first draft, just really came to life. And I really enjoyed writing about the family dynamics. I will say, though, that a variety of the dynamics within the McKenna family is like my family now, not necessarily my birth family, but Gage is based a little bit on my husband. Both the girls, Caden and Piper, are both based very loosely on my two daughters. And so there's some humor in there, and we're kind of a humorous family. There's adventure in there, and we're kind of an adventurous family. And so I did take more of that from my adult, you know, my family, rather than how I grew up. So it's kind of a combo of the two.
Well, that's a nice show of love to the family that you have now. I actually did. There's a quiz on your website where you can see which of the McKenna siblings you're more like, what kind of Alaskan courage you have. And I took that quiz and I got Piper. So you can tell your daughter that whatever inspired you, whatever character traits,
yep,
I like those as well.
I will let her know that.
Great.
She'll love to hear that. So she actually helped me put the quiz together. We came up with the different questions and, you know, what the different answers would be, and she really participated in helping that come together. So I will let her know. That'll be very cool for her to hear.
Oh, that's fantastic. So for those of you listening, if you are interested in Danny Petrie's website, like I said, it's fantastic. You should visit it. It's www.dannypetrie.com. On there, you'll find links on how to buy all of her novels and all of this extra information if you're interested in her characters and their lives. That's all available there as well. One other thing I noticed when I was reading your series, I haven't quite made it through yet, but I made it through the first three books. I'm skipped the fourth one, and I'm reading about Reef right now. I think I like his character the best, actually.
That's so cool. Thank you so much for taking time to read the stories. I appreciate that.
Well, it's actually a genre I was pretty interested in. I like romance. I like romantic thrillers, and I hadn't read inspirational romance before, but I found it really interesting. I'm wondering, though, about how it is to write. How do I explain? So in some of your books, in one of your books, there's sex trafficking as part of it. In another of your books, there's a character that runs the risk of getting roofied. So how do you write about these really terrible parts of human nature? You know, the unfortunate aspect that builds the suspense of your books. How do you write that and balance that against the love of Jesus and the love of God that you're really trying to convey?
that's a great question. So a couple thoughts on that. When I sit down to write a story, I do not have a theme in mind. I do not have a spiritual or biblical theme in mind. I just sit down and start writing about the characters and kind of learn to get to know my characters through my first draft and kind of see what develops. And so I'm always kind of surprised by the different things that develop in the stories. But I think the biggest thing for me is that, yes, you know, we live in a world where those things take place and those things happen to everybody. And really what I would like readers to take away from it is that through it all, God is with us, and that there is so much place for forgiveness and redemption and restoration. And I really, you know, believe that. And so I really like my characters to go through real things that, you know, unfortunately happen, and then deal with it with their relationship with Jesus and, you know, how he carries them through it.
Yeah, you do a great job of showing how some of your characters, while they may struggle with their relationship with God, there's often, as they come back around and really become committed, re-energized in their personal relationship with God and Jesus, that it helps with all the other challenges and struggles they have in their life. It kind of helps them to fall away a little bit more.
Right. Because we all, you know, as you know, even as Christians, we all struggle with our, you know, moments of doubt or fears or why did this happen? I mean, you know, the Christian life is not a perfect life. God never said it would be. And so I really feel showing real life and how you can go through that life with Christ at your side and let the characters really experience that and let it be authentic, hopefully, is what I hope comes across. It's why I don't start out with a theme in mind, because I don't ever want to come across as preachy or, you know, everything's perfect, that type of thing. And so that's kind of how I approach it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. So I'd like to change tracks here a little bit and talk to you about how you've been publishing a lot of books over the last few years. This has all kind of happened since 2012. I know you said you were writing for the 7 years before that, but as well as writing and publishing your books, you're also a devoted wife, mother, and now a grandmother. So how do you balance your writing with your life and responsibilities? Do you have specific times or specific places that you go to write, or does it just kind of blend in with your everyday living?
Yeah, it's a great question. It would probably be best if I did have specific times, and I do kind of shoot for that, but life just happens, and so it really kind of blends in. I know there's days that I'm going to have my grandson, you know, for the afternoon, and so I'll usually get up earlier to write before he comes. I know there'll be a few days I have that are just full writing days, and I try to get a lot done on those days, but there's a lot of flexibility in there. If I find, you know, like my daughter called one day when I planned to be writing and said, we're taking Calvin to the zoo, and it's his first trip to the zoo, do you want to come? I didn't want to give that up, so I went, but then I wrote the next day. I wrote on Saturday and wrote for the day, so it is definitely kind of flexible and moves along with family life, and trying to find that balance is definitely interesting. I don't know that it's ever quite achieved, but I do try to find a good balance for that.
I saw on your website you did an interview where you were on a boat where you were staying, I think, in Chesapeake Bay, finishing up maybe your story, and you said that you had the opportunity to go away for a few days and really hunker down and work, and it was a nice break, way to focus. So do you like to do that, if you can, at the end of every book, to kind of give yourself that 100% focus?
I do. That was the second time I had done it. Both times have been extremely helpful. It's kind of amazing to me. I don't go for long, but like 2-3 days, how much writing I get done, because, you know, there really aren't any distractions. You know, I'm not, the phone's not ringing. I usually shut my cell phone off. And so having that time to just really dive completely into the story at that stage. It's usually very close to done, but I'm still working on the revision part of it, and it really just allows me to kind of power through, and I've definitely found that to be helpful. So I hope to continue to do that with each book I'm working on.
Right. Now moving forward, you started the Chesapeake Valor series because the Alaskan Courage series is kind of at a natural end. You've covered all the five siblings, and then you've got your story, which is the origin story of the parents. Did I get that right?
Yes, you sure did.
Yeah, so that's kind of seems like it's you've got some closure to that series, and you've got your Chesapeake Valor series, and the first book has just come out in January. Is that your focus now as a writer, and do you have a layout or an idea of how that series is going to pan out?
It's definitely where my focus is. I know that there's going to be four books in the series. I know the first three are going to be focused on a different friend. It's about four friends that grew up together since they were, you know, T-ball age, and they've all gone into law enforcement. But a tragedy happens, and one of the friends has been missing for a number of years, and it kind of ruptured the relationships. And so, well, each story is independent and focuses on a different one of the men that grew up together. There is the overarching theme of the missing friend and what happened to him, and, you know, why did he leave on his own accord? Was he murdered? Was he? And so there's kind of an overarching, but I don't get into too many details just because I really don't plot out. I kind of sit down with an idea like, what if there was modern remains found at Gettysburg, and which for cold shot, and I, you know, decided, okay, I'm going to need a park ranger, and I'm going to need a forensic anthropologist, and then I just sat down and started writing. So I really don't know where the stories are going exactly or what's going on until after I've at least done the first draft, and I usually stop and kind of think through and read it and see what needs to be fleshed out for it to be a really strong story, and then I kind of dive back in.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you kind of let it grow organically.
Yes, absolutely. I would say so. Definitely. I enjoy that. It's kind of what my favorite part is just kind of seeing characters come to life and, you know, seeing the different directions stories go. Doing that, however, means a lot of rewrites. You know, when other authors plot things out, I found they have less rewrites because they have already figured it out ahead of time, but it just doesn't work that way for me. I just really enjoy the kind of exploration of seeing how it goes all on its own.
Right. So I see that you've been traveling a lot, not just around Maryland, but also North and South Carolina and into Tennessee, doing speaking events and book signings. And you're a best-selling author, quite successful. So do you have any advice for aspiring writers or people that are just starting to get published and looking to do these kind of speaking events or book signings? You know, any advice that you can offer with your experience?
Sure. I think for aspiring writers, I wouldn't worry about it until you're published. But, you know, for newly published authors, I think that it's great to try to connect and start locally. I mean, it's a great way to go and kind of go into the bookstores and introduce yourself and introduce them to your book. You know, ask to kind of speak with the manager and introduce yourself and what your story is and let them know that you're available for events and give them a contact, you know, a business card. And, you know, once you start doing that and your name gets out there, then you will start to get requests that just come in. So you do need to be proactive in some ways. You do need to, you know, kind of check out the stores and introduce yourself. I have lots of friends, whenever they travel, they go into the different bookstores in that area and do the same exact thing while they're traveling, or they drop off bookmarks to different stores and, you know, just kind of, hi, thanks for carrying my books. Here's a stack of bookmarks if your patrons would like them. Getting involved through libraries is another wonderful way. A lot of times libraries are looking for speakers, so calling your library and ask if they, you know, would host you for speaking, and then things will just start to come together and come in, and you'll end up having to say no occasionally to not be traveling all the time. So
right. That is good advice. So for all you aspiring writers or people that are newly published, please contact the library. We would love to have you come and speak and share your books with us. That's all the time we have today, but I want to thank you so much for joining me today and talking about your Alaskan Courage series, and give you the opportunity if there's anything else you'd like to add before we sign off.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for hosting me. I really appreciate it. I was so tickled about this interview, that it's taking place in Kodiak, and I just, you know, really hope readers enjoy the series. I am just in awe of the beauty of your state, and I cannot wait to hopefully one day make it out there and spend a lot of time seeing these gorgeous areas for myself.
Oh, well, thank you. We would definitely love to see you here if you get the chance.
Well, thank you.
All right. You've been listening to Beyond the Cover on Dog-Eared Reads, where we are chatting with Danny Petrie, author of the Alaskan Courage book series, including the best-selling novels Submerged, Shattered, Stranded, Silenced, and Sabotaged, along with the short story Shadowed, featured in the novella collection entitled Sins of the Past, which was just released on May 3rd of this year. To find out more information about Danny Petrie, visit her website, www.dannypetrie.com. You'll find information about all of her books and where you can purchase them, as well as a lot of extra information. Her books are available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, Books A Million, and ChristianBook.com. In addition, the 5 books of the Alaskan Courage series are available now at your Kodiak Public Library, as well as on the digital library with Overdrive. This is Sathenia. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Cover and Dog-Eared Reads. Until next time, happy reading. Well, here we are on Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA. And if you're just joining us, we are about to head into the lively live chat segment of our show. For those of you that have been visiting the Kodiak Public Library, you may have noticed that there's a lot of wonderful programming happening there. Bob Ross is still doing his 10-week Sketching for Shy People workshop. It's very successful. It's now happening on Monday nights as well as Thursday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. And beyond that, the calendar is just chock full of fun events. To help me explain more about what's going on over the summer break for you at the Kodiak Public Library, I'd like to introduce Katie Baxter, the library's director, for the lively live chat segment. Hi, Katie.
Hey there, Athenia. How you doing today?
Great. Well, I'd like to welcome you back. It's been a while since we've had you on the show because you've had a lot going on. So tell me, what have you been up to the last few months?
Yes, amazing activities and initiatives thanks to the wonderful library staff and our patrons who have been helping to contribute ideas for collections, programs. We really wanted to concentrate in January and throughout the spring on bringing Kodiak a nice summer reading program. And that did take time to develop. And so we worked hard to roll out a kickoff day on June 1st. That's come and gone. We had close to 65 people register that day.
Great.
Which is wonderful, all age groups. We had a wonderful response, given that it was a very low-key rollout. We just mentioned it in our library publicity. And I'm delighted. And after June 1st, we've had, don't quote me on this, but I do believe we had some record attendance at the library for these first 2 weeks of June.
Great. That's really fantastic. So explain to me a little bit about what the summer reading program is for people that might not know.
Sure. I really love the way libraries can help boost literacy and just reading skills and interests. And in the summer, of course, that's so important for children and teenagers because they're out of their school setting. And so, gosh, back in the 70s, I think, the library community, the reading teacher community started to look at what it means to not read every day. And it turned out that those students would be losing some of their vocabulary and their comprehension skills when it came to reading. So public libraries decided, let's make sure we help these families and community members during the summer. So the American Library Association started adopting summer reading themes. Public libraries across the nation would look at new releases by different grade levels, age levels, interest themes. And so Kodiak participates in a national collaborative program where libraries all over the country are just looking at, okay, what's interesting people these days? There's a strong interest in physical activity and looking at the connection between mind and intellect stimulation and physical exercise, just getting up and moving, breathing in new and better ways. Books are bringing that theme into their publications. The theme's Get in the Game this summer, Move, Breathe, Read. And we're rolling out all kinds of activities to support that theme.
Right. So this isn't just about getting the kids reading books. This is also about getting the kids down to the library to see some of the amazing activities that you've got going on. June and July, the library calendar is packed. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, please check out the library's website or come by the library. They always have calendars available at the circulation desk. But Katie, give me a highlights.
I'm really looking forward to some of the programs that speak to kids and adults. And again, thanks to the staff who really thought up some of these ideas, we're going to collaborate with the Teen Center. And on July 24th, we've got a dance planned, and it's called the Family Dare to Dream and Dance Day. And it's in the afternoon from 2 to 4 on Sunday, July 24th at our Teen Center. And we got this idea because there's a great book out there by a young lady called Amy Purdy. She wrote the book On My Own Two Feet, From Losing My Legs to Learning the Dance of Life. And we thought this is a great way to celebrate that idea of just getting the game of life. We each have our strengths. We each have our dreams. We each have our hurdles. And this young woman, Amy, she had meningitis, bacterial meningitis, and she did lose her two legs. But she went on to dance, to become an Olympic snowboarder. She designs fashion. This is a wonderful, engaging story for parents, teachers, older teens. And we thought we would just get people reading the book and then come together at the Teen Center for a dance where we will have the music of our Kodiak cultures represented. Various dancers will be on hand. We just want to relax, meet each other, and hear about family dreams.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. So that book is one of the featured books for the summer reading program as well, right?
Yes, yes. And so we have multiple copies available at the library. You can go online to our City of Kodiak website. You can click on the button to the library page. From there, search the catalog. The book is called On My Own Two Feet. When that title comes up, if you want to put a hold on it, you can use your library card and your personal identification number to reserve a copy of the book. I think there are about six copies on that display shelf across from the main desk. But we did order a bunch.
Closer to the dance, those copies might become a little bit harder to get, so it's a good idea to put a hold on it through the library website.
Then the other, can I tell you about another fun
Please
thing?
Do.
So we wanted to keep people up and moving and thinking about food sources. That's been important to Kodiak throughout the year. The Kitchen Gardener series at the library has been very popular. We also know around Kodiak, we have a couple of days a week now this summer when we can enjoy farmers market. We spend a lot of time discussing subsistence food sources. At the library, we were a site for one of those wonderful wild edible lectures that Tanya gave as a result of her work at the Refuge Center. And so at the library, we're looking at good, healthy, nutritional food sources. We're just having fun. The book is called Real is the New Natural by Julie D. Andrews. And we'll be talking about how do we taste good food. And then we thought to bring in the sports aspect to this, that we'll host an organic chicken shoot. So we're going to have some archery moments using Zing bow and arrows. So kind of like Nerf balls, but this is a Zing bow and arrow. That's happening on Sunday, July 31st at 2 p.m. We'll have an outdoor location announced by the time of that event. And here's the really exciting thing. our archery organic chicken shoot is on July 31st, because that's, Athenia, do you know?
I think I do.
What important day is July 31st?
I think it has something to do with Harry Potter.
I do too. It's Harry Potter's birthday.
Ah, how exciting.
And it's also the release date of J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
And I know a lot of us have been waiting for that book for years, but that, yeah, definitely, I'm going to be putting that one on hold.
Excellent. Yes. So again, we'll be getting multiple copies. I don't have a copy for everyone, but I know that if people use their library card, go to that online catalog, place a hold, that we'll have a sense of the wait list. And if we can, we'll order more copies so that that wait list can just keep moving. But I'm really excited. And it's kind of fun that we have an event. We can get together. We can talk about this new book. We can talk about books other people are reading. And it will be fun to have the various targets set up, because I know someone was saying, maybe could we have a Death Eater target? So we'll see what we can do. And that's what's so nice about Kodiak Public Library staff and patrons. People work together, bringing creative ideas forward, and we can kind of pull some things off at the drop of a hat and combine community interests. And so we can have a Harry Potter theme to our organic chicken shoot.
That's right. The more fun it is, the better it'll be for the community.
Yes.
So that book is called Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Yes.
And it's, again, like Katie mentioned, it's being released on the 31st of July, but it's going to be popular. So there is a strong likelihood that if you put it on hold, you might have to wait. That's why Katie is encouraging you to add your name to the wait list, so she has an idea of how many people in Kodiak want to read it, and then she'll know how many to order. Do you have any other books you want to talk about?
So we've got another book here that I grabbed from the library shelf, and I'm really, again, appreciative of the way library staff just ran with this theme of get in the game, and also related sports and athletic activities to things that matter to people here in Kodiak. There's a book called A Hunter's Heart, Honest Essays on Blood Sport. So the editor, David Peterson, collected essays from wonderful writers who are also significant hunters. And so for folks who are just on the go, have too big of a pile of books to read anyway, this is a great option this summer, because it's a collection of essays. And the library staff will be holding two different discussion groups focused on this book. You can come and share your insights and your questions and your own hunting adventure stories by showing up to these two different book groups or grabbing, again, a copy of this book. We have multiple copies. It's a collection that will help us lead up to the fun of the organic chicken shoot. One thing that our readers tell us is, they may never have thought to pick this book up on their own, but boy, that experience of reading a book with a community and hearing other people's insights, perspectives, what they liked, what they didn't like, it brings the enjoyment of a book to a whole new level. And there's a sense of accomplishment, I think, in a very relaxing, fun way. It's not intimidating to just show up at a book group and read something you never would have read before.
That is the joy of being in a book club. So it's nice that the Kodiak Public Library is offering it for anybody. And also, since hunting season, deer season, doesn't start till August, this is a good way for all you people that are avid hunters to get excited for the season that's almost upon us.
And Athenia, if I could also just mention that there's an extensive youth program as well. Again, library staff really paid attention to all of the different age level of kids. And we have four different reading groups. Often the reading titles focus on Battle of the Book titles, because that's a real important program to Alaskans. I love that that national program got its roots in Alaska.
That is
so cool. And so thanks to a grant from the Alaska State Library, we focused on Battle of the Book collections this whole year. We added multiple copies. We also included copies of films, so book to films. And we added read-alikes. So if you liked one kind of Battle of the Book, we're giving you other authors and other titles so you can continue following your interests. So the four-year-olds right on up to 16, 17, 18-year-olds, there is a reading group for you at the library this summer, as well as game night for kids and film night.
Yes, Kodiak Public Library has started carrying a lot of board games. So even if the summer reading program doesn't appeal to you and you're more the type that want to play board games with your friends, the Kodiak Public Library has you covered for that as well. Check it out. I heard you mention, Katie, the state budgets and grants, mm-hmm. and I want to check in with you about the OWL funding. That was a big issue that was kind of on our minds a lot, and the state budget has almost been finalized now. So how did we do?
So thank you for keeping that in mind, Athenia. The Alaska Library Association paid a lot of attention to the release of the different budgets throughout the legislative season. And once we learned early on that both in the House and Senate budget, the funding for that online with libraries internet connection budget line had been eliminated, the Alaska Library Association decided to work quickly and actually just really prioritize restoring the funding for that line item. Of course, the association could not do that by itself. So many of the legislators who believe in online with library funding, as well as our library users, and just people around the community who understand that it's necessary for folks to have dependable internet connections when they're applying for jobs, government services, making their travel plans, or when they're relying on video conference training to save time and money on travel, being an island in particular. So I'm happy to report that coming down to the wire, the House minority did restore the governor's full amount, so just under $800,000 of funding, back in House Bill 256, which has gone to the governor. It's awaiting his signature. So we're not finished yet. Maybe by the time this program airs, the budget will have been signed. However, I must say I am deeply appreciative of the members of the Kodiak community that signed the online petition that was sponsored by the Alaska Library Association through the help of the Every Library group. We were really able to get the library community to work very quickly. You know, as librarians, we're resourceful. So we just looked at what's the easiest way to build that voice for Alaskans. And so that online petition, I believe at this point there's about 1,200 signatures, and we were able to forward those on. And we have various legislators, Representative Keto in particular, who really moved the work of getting that funding restored. Could not happen alone. So we'll see. There are other things that are not funded. And so again, libraries are working hard to see what we can do to provide some kind of access to some of those key resources. Like there's an automotive mechanic manual that typically has been available online to Alaskans. That funding is in jeopardy, and some other databases. Well, we can get into that more over the summer. But I really thank you for asking. Our state library did take a deep hit. Things have to be reworked. We knew as a library community that deep cuts were going to come. Yet again, as a library community, we're there to support the needs of our users. So we went to bat for that online with libraries.
And pending that signature, won. So that's mm-hmm. great news.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Well, we're looking forward to having Katie Baxter back on Lively Live Chats next month, where she can introduce us to a few new faces that you might be seeing at the Kodiak Public Library. They're getting some new staff members, and I'm really excited to hear from them and maybe give you all a chance to meet them as well. So please stay tuned again next month for the Lively Live Chat segment with Katie Baxter on Dog-Eared Reads.
Thanks, everyone. Happy summer reading.
And if summer reading aloud of Shakespeare plays is something that interests you, Jordana Long is offering a Shakespeare reading circle that's happening the last Sunday of this month. That is the 26th of June from 2:30 to 4 p.m. Her and her husband, Chris, are now joining me on Dog-Eared Reads to talk a little bit more about A Midsummer Night's Dream. They will be closing out our show tonight with their discussion. So before I head into that talk, I want to say one more time, thank you again to everybody who listens to Dog-Eared Reads and to our KPLA membership and supporters as well. Happy reading.
Hi, this is Chris.
And this is Jordana.
And we're both longs.
Yes. And we both like Shakespeare.
Which is somewhat ironic, I suppose, that say, I'm a scientist by trade, and I don't think I know very many scientists who like Shakespeare, so.
I'm an English teacher, so it's probably a good thing I like Shakespeare. So we're going to talk a little bit about A Midsummer Night's Dream, which, not coincidentally, I'm going to be leading a Shakespeare reading circle of on June 26th at the Kodiak Public Library at 2 p.m. in the multipurpose room. And it is open to whoever wants to come and read some Shakespeare. And we're just going to talk a little bit tonight about our thoughts about this amazing play. And then if you all have your interest piqued, you can come out and read it. Anyway, let's talk about Midsummer Night's Dream. This is a play that I think I go back way far with this play. It's one of the first plays I ever saw in my life. I think it's probably the first Shakespeare play I ever saw, because I remember there was like a Shakespeare in the Park thing in Berkeley, California when I was like four. My parents took me to it. It was Midsummer Night's Dream. I remember that the Hermia and Helena spent a lot of time turning a somersault. Maybe just one person did a somersault, but it like really stuck in my brain.
My first time seeing this play performed live was on our honeymoon, so that made a large impression on me as well. That was actually a lot of fun. They did the fairies as kind of a gypsy theme, kind of the wandering and, you know, somewhat wild and dancing and all of that. And it worked really well, actually, with the script. It gave some spice to the whole thing.
And I saw it performed by a tiny little private school in California. It was like first through eighth grade, and the kids, it was highly abridged, but it was so cute. I mean, they just had these tiny little kids playing fairies, and then at the end, when you have the play within a play, there's a little boy who was playing the wall, and he had like a cardboard box that was his costume. And at one point, as part of the action, he's like knocked over, and he kind of lay there like a turtle waving his arms. Anyway, one of the things that we're getting at here is that Midsummer Night's Dream just works so well in a number of different contexts and with settings. You can get really creative with, you know, your ideas of the staging and that sort of thing with this play.
It is a very versatile play, and I mean, it's a lot of fun. Just talking about it over the last couple of nights, because we've been buffing up. I listened to an audio version, and then we watched was a 1981 BBC version, which starred Helen Mirren as Titania in that one. So back when she was young. Fun thing about this play is that it's through and through a comedy. One of the marvelous things about Shakespeare is a lot of his comedies blend the tragic into them.
Yes.
To a degree, some lesser, some more. And some of his plays, it's hard to tell which it is, you know.
Sometimes until the very end. And then as you get on in Shakespeare's career, the later plays are it's pretty ambiguous often at the end too. I mean, at least Midsummer Night's Dream ends pretty clearly as a comedy.
Yes.
But I agree with you. There are a lot of points in the play where it could go the tragic way. And one of those is right at the beginning where Hermia's father, Aegeus, basically says she has to marry this guy, Demetrius, that she doesn't love, or she's going to either be killed or have to become a nun, which is kind of a setup. It's a harsh setup for a comedy, you know? It's hard to know where you can go from there that would be cheerful. I mean, Romeo and Juliet doesn't start out that heavy, you know?
No, it doesn't. Then you throw in a bunch of fairies. Because
why not?
They're in the woods at night in ancient Greece, and why not?
Yeah, ancient Elizabethan Greece. I did hear one Oxford Shakespeare expert or fairy expert, I don't know. She was basically commenting that, you know, back in Shakespeare's context, the fairies wouldn't have been these happy little playful, you know, innocent woodland sprites that we tend to think of when we think of fairies today. But they would have had kind of this menacing overtone to them that based on the folklore that was often still kind of believed in that day.
Yeah.
You know, which I think is an interesting, it puts an interesting spin on how you could read the play. The fairies being kind of threatening almost. Yeah, Oberon and Titania are the king and queen of the fairies, and as the play begins, they're having this quarrel.
And this quarrel is having, you know, these massive effects on the mortal realm. It's, say, they're fighting, but because of that, the weather's going all wonky and the crops are failing and, you know, mortal people are suffering. And what they're fighting about, they have what's known as a changeling, which is a child that's stolen away from the mortal realm and brought into the fairy realm.
But then Oberon, for no really good reason that's ever given in the play, decides that he wants this child to be his own servant or something like that. So anyway, he's basically demanding the child from Titania, and she's saying no, no, never. And he decides that he's going to put this spell on her by means of magic petal juice, flower juice.
It's a flower that got hit by one of Cupid's arrows, so it's, you know, picked up some of the potency of his
love spell.
Yeah.
So then the idea is that Titania will have this spell put upon her, and then she'll fall in love with something really disgusting, and then Oberon can basically humiliate her into giving up the child. So it's a very kind of strange and
weird
setup, you know.
Well, and then so you've got the two couples. You've got Hermia and Lysander, who are in love with each other. They want to marry each other. You've got Demetrius. He's followed that couple, you know, because they're trying to escape. And, I mean, he did woo, and he did win the heart of the poor Helena, who's following all of them through the woods. And so you've got this kind of this love quadrangle that's going on in there. And Oberon happens to hear
Demetrius and Helena
talking in the woods, and he realizes that she's really in love with him, but he's just being scornful and frankly nasty to her. So he tells his servant Puck, one of the major characters in the play, "I want you to find this Athenian and put the flower on his eyes as well, so that when he wakes up, he'll see Helena, and then he'll fall in love with her and all will be well." So he goes off, he anoints his wife's eyes, so she will fall in love with someone else or something else, and Puck goes off in search of Athenians.
And then he finds the wrong ones.
And meanwhile, you know, in this subplot, there's a lot of subplots in this play. The love juice gets applied later on to Demetrius's eyes as well, and he falls in love with Helena. You know, it makes for great comic dialogue.
Yeah, it's actually one of the longest scenes. I think it's the longest scene in the play, and one of the longer scenes in Shakespeare, actually, with the four of them kind of squabbling. And it's interesting, too, because, you know, from a literary perspective, most of it is written in rhymed couplets, so you have two lines that are the same number of beats, and then they end in the same rhyming sound. At one point that breaks down, but basically you have these four people who are all just rhyming like crazy at each other. It's kind of like a poetry slam for Shakespearean people. Anyway, Puck and Oberon, in their quest to make a fool of Titania, Puck goes off and he finds this troupe of amateur actors who are putting together this play.
Which is absolutely brilliant.
And the play ends with this wonderful play within a play scene. And, you know, I think when I was younger, I kind of ignored this part. I found it, I couldn't figure out why it was in the play. And as I've seen the play performed and read it a number of times, it's become kind of my favorite part. What's interesting is it's about Pyramus and Thisbe are two lovers who live next door to each other, and their gardens are separated by a wall. And their families are at enmity with each other.
It's kind of Romeo and Juliet, actually.
And that's the thing, and that's what's so interesting is, historically, probably Midsummer Night's Dream was written for, most likely written to be part of the entertainment of a wedding of a court official at Elizabeth's court. And so basically what Shakespeare's doing is he's writing about a group of actors at a wedding who are putting on a play that's kind of like Romeo and Juliet. So he's kind of parodying his own play. You know, it's just, it's interesting. There's kind of all these layers to what was going on there.
He just likes to do these layer things.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so they put on this play, and it's just, it crashes and burns in every way, but it's just really fun.
It's hilarious.
You know, I think that A Midsummer Night's Dream is really, in a lot of ways, Shakespeare's most accessible play. Would you agree about that?
I think so.
It's a pretty happy ending.
It is.
Well, we are enthused about Midsummer Night's Dream, clearly, and we invite you to come out and read it on June 26th. I will be there. Chris may or may not be there. And
I hope I can be there. I enjoy
it. If you want to babysit
play.
Our kids, let us know.
Yeah, actually, that would be great. That way I can show up.
Anyway, and we will hopefully see you there. And
hopefully have a good time.
Yeah, all right.
Let's bring your own sack. So
come out on June 26th, 2 p.m. Kodiak Public Library Multipurpose Room to read Midsummer Night's Dream.
And if you just want to come and listen, that's fine too.